Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Movie Geeks United special uncut Friday the 13th interview series. On this episode, the producer of the definitive documentary on the making of the series. His name was Jason. Producer, Anthony Masai. I love the movie. It's awesome. I was geeking out watching it.
Well, I was geeking out watching all the, you know, all the talent walk through the door every hour on the hour. I mean, during our 10-day interview window. So I totally get it, what you're
wow.
going through. So yeah.
So you guys had 10 days to interview all of these people, and I would imagine they're walking in one right after the other.
Absolutely.
Tell me what were some particular highlights of that whole experience for you.
Well, you know, I'm a huge Kane Hodder fan. I mean, I just,
yeah.
you know, I think when I saw part seven, I was a senior in high school, and I just couldn't believe, I mean, that was just the best movie I had ever seen, you know, and he just completely is Jason for me. So when he walked in, I thought, okay, now we're making a Jason documentary. I just
right.
was like, oh, Kane's here, you know, and so that was definitely a highlight. But, you know, like people like Bonnie Hellman, who just were in part four, she's the one that squeezes the banana, you know, and gets
yeah.
that. You know, just little people like that where you think, what happened? What happened to all these people? Seeing her coming in was just really great. And she brought with her all these behind-the-scenes photos that no one had ever seen, and they're in our documentary. And just little things like that. And Amy Steele was great. Adrian King, of course.
Yeah.
Just these people that you kind of wonder. Shavar Ross was probably one of the best interviews that we had. He was just really funny. And mm-hmm. I think for me, it was the long lost people, the people that you think, like, you know, would they even be interested in talking about Friday the 13th? Elizabeth Caton from part seven, you know. So everybody was what I would say. I wouldn't say everybody was a highlight, but those were some of the memorable ones for me.
Yeah. We found this too, and Jerry will attest to this too. In speaking to some of these people for the show, the same as you have, they're just absolutely delightful, many of them. And what's interesting is, whether they pursued acting or not, or they were serious about acting when they got these roles, this has become such a part of their lives and such a phenomenon that no one kind of expected, especially at the beginning
yeah.
of this
a
journey.
Lot of people said that. It was like nobody knew. Who knew?
yeah.
So it must be strange for them so many years later to be mobbed by people at conventions and
right.
to be part of something where they're looking back 30 years later. So
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Very much.
Tell me, so was part seven, you said, was that the first one that kind of entered your life?
No, I remembered when I was a kid, like really young, my sister and her boyfriend, who's now my brother-in-law, went out to see Friday the 13th. You know, it was that kind of, and I couldn't go because I was so young, and I had seen Halloween on TV, or I knew about it, or I can't remember exactly how I knew of Friday the 13th and why I was so excited about it. And then I remember when they came home, I was grilling them with questions. And I go, how did everybody die? And I remembered my brother-in-law saying, there were no guns in this movie. You know, just I had this weird memory of me grilling them about this movie. And Halloween drifted sort of into my life, and I just loved it as a kid. I remember going the next day back to school. I saw it on TV, Halloween. And the next day in school, I was talking about it so much and that the kids were telling me to shut up. And I just... I loved Halloween, and so I was just a horror movie fan from the beginning, and every time a movie came out, a Friday movie, I was there opening night. I remember 3D. I remember Part 4. I remembered liking the ending to Part 5. You know, back then I had no judgment. I didn't know what was good, what was bad. Mm-hmm. It was all good, you know? And so that's kind of where my excitement for the series is. And it lives sort of in that time frame. And, you know, and as the movies progressed and I got older, I could see, oh, that wasn't so great.
I also think that the internet has done that. You realize there are these general consensus about not just these movies, but a lot of different movies. And you realize, oh, wait a minute. No, the popular consensus on this one is this is awful, but this is classic. And I think the internet's done that over the last decade.
It absolutely has. And it reminds you about, like, for instance, you know, like, there were no special effects, no CGI effects. And so the low budgets were assets for those films, and they had to convince you that somebody was being folded in half backwards, you know, without the aid of any kind of CGI effect or whatever. They had to build a hole in the ground and put an actor in there and put fake legs and blah, blah, blah. And so I think the lack of funding was something that helped them, whereas now everything is just, you know, I think CGI is used way too much, and it kind of, your eye can always tell, I think, when something is not, doesn't look right, and so no matter how great, whatever effect they're pulling off, you're just kind of thinking, wow, it was really kind of a cartoon, you know, that was pulling off the effect, so... Yeah, there was a lot of heart rolling through those films in those years because they were strapped money-wise, and yet they had to pull off these crazy kills. And
very inventive, yeah.
Yeah.
There's also, whatever the merits of one of the particular films are, and years later you can look back, as you said, and say, oh, that wasn't so great. They still have kind of, and it sounds weird talking about a slasher film, but a kind of innocence to them. Do you find that's the case? Like, you watch them and there's kind of a nostalgic kind of innocence when you look back on these films now?
I agree. And I think it's not only in the Friday films, but many, many horror, many, like Halloween, definitely Nightmare on Elm Street. There's definitely, it was more of an innocent time. Things are just so scrutinized now, especially with blogs and, you know, it's like, for instance, like with His Name Was Jason, fortunately, we're getting some really, really great reviews, and it's, you know, fans are embracing it, and they love seeing all of these, like, 90 people coming back and talking about the Friday film. But then you read the one review where they say, you know, where's Steve Miner? You know, he's gone. Why didn't he come in? Well, of course we reached out to Steve Miner, but it didn't work out, and you want to respond by saying something sarcastic, like, well, if I had put, you know, a piece of Adrian King's hair laminated in the DVD box, they still wouldn't be happy, you know?
Right,
but I think that's the difference between audiences now and audiences back then. It was as I said before, like, for me, everything was okay back in the 80s. You know, I didn't care how low budget the movie was. I didn't care that Jason wasn't in Part 5. You know, I didn't, until the end, I didn't, actually, that wasn't him at the end. So it's, and it was okay. Now I think everybody's a critic, and with the internet, you're absolutely right when you say that, you know, it makes it harder to really enjoy a movie. And plus, you know about it. People have read the script to the new Friday the 13th movie. 3 months, you know, the day it was submitted, probably over to Warner Brothers or Paramount. I forgot who's making it. Everybody online has read it. I have 10 friends that have read the script, and I haven't because I don't want to take away that innocence. I still long for that, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You're right. Tell me about this process, because what strikes me most about the film, you're obviously talking about, you know, a dozen movies here. So there's a lot of ground to cover. How did you structure it? How did you figure out the structure of your documentary?
That took a little while because when I did my 25 Years of Terror DVD for Halloween, we wanted to go movie by movie because the making of each one of those movies was kind of, in some instances, more interesting than the movie. You know, like Halloween was a pioneer for lots of reasons. Then Halloween 2 comes along and you're... you know, it's like it's the first sequel. It's the first major horror sequel that really, like, Hollywood was embracing the idea of the sequel at that time. Nowadays, you know, My Bloody Valentine 3D will probably have a sequel, and it's kind of expected. But back then it didn't. Halloween 3 then suddenly lost Myers in that. And so it sort of was pioneering with every movie that came out. Not true, really, with the Friday films. The first seven Friday movies were released in the first 8 years, so they were really cookie cutter. And so how they made the movie really wasn't that interesting. So we said, well, you know, if we start going 1, 2, 3, 4 and go all the way through 12, people might get bored by part 6 because they're going to hear, and then we made part 6 and then we made part 7. So what we decided to do after examining that was to talk about subjects and saying, well, what do people collectively remember about the Friday films? And it's Jason's best kills, you know, the way the different actors portrayed Jason. Why is the final girl such a key ingredient? What makes for a great movie? How has Jason penetrated pop culture? All of those, like the psyche of Jason. What is going, like, why is he this little boy that was a drowning victim? Why is his vengeance the key to this whole thing? And so we started saying, well, if those are the subjects, we should then tell the story that way. And so then the idea became, we'll ask our interviewees questions pertaining to the subject in which we want them to talk about. And then we wrapped it with a hosting segment with Tom Savini, and it seemed to be the perfect formula, I guess, way to do this project.
Yeah. Hearing Tom Savini in interviews and such, and he just seems like the nicest guy.
Mm-hmm.
And wondering what that was like to work with him, and was he very excited about the prospect of kind of hosting this, or, you know, in a way?
He was, and it was surprising to me because I had heard some opposite stories about Savini, and all hearsay. I've heard people just say things, oh, he's not a very nice guy, and yet he still does all the conventions, and he doesn't do special effects anymore. He's doing more acting now, but you know, he did create that first Jason, and it was his idea to create sort of that, I know it's not politically correct, but that mongoloid look. And it was him that sort of breathed that little piece of genius into the script, and then he kills off Jason in part 4. So he seemed to be the perfect host, but we didn't think of him as a host until later on, I guess very late. We kind of hired him, not at the last minute, but almost at the last minute. We wanted Corey Feldman to host it, and he said yes, and then he was not available to do the job, and we said, well, who else could we get? And then suddenly it hit me, Tom Savini. I mean, because in 20 years, if someone pops this DVD into their, you know, their DVD player, it'll still make sense in 20 years that that Tom Savini's hosting this thing. So he was great. He was a total professional. We only shot with him for 2 days at the Universal Maze, and he just memorized it. He just showed up completely professional. He was helpful. He made suggestions on how to frame the shots with our director. I can't say enough positive things about him. He was great.
Yeah. You mentioned Halloween, and obviously that was the starting point for Friday the 13th. I mean, they saw that Halloween was so popular, making so much money, they wanted to kind of capitalize on that in a way. How did Friday the 13th define its genre?
Definitely, there's one answer for that. It's exactly the over-the-top kills. And I think that is what is the key to the enjoyment of all of the Friday movies. And, Saw has been very successful. I think they're making their sixth movie, and it will probably continue on as long as the Friday films.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what made Friday the 13th so successful was that their kills were so over-the-top, so crazy, that they were like roller coaster rides. It was okay to be jostled around like that, but not take it so seriously. You know that you're safe, and you don't feel like slitting your wrists when the lights come up. You know, you aren't taken down to a low point in movies like Seven. You know, great movie, but in terms of tone, I think it really brings you down to a low, whereas the Friday films went so over the top with their kills that they were actually able to do the opposite. They were able to bring you to a very big high while showing you these gruesome kills, and I think that's how they define the genre. So Halloween was really not a slasher, in my opinion. So it was really a thriller. It was, to me, and it really didn't have a great story. The whole bloodline thing was not even established till the second movie. And so for that, it was just sort of like lightning in a bottle. But Friday the 13th picked up on the recipe and said, okay, we're going to go crazy and go over the top. And that's what they did, and that's what people wanted to see in every single movie. And that's how I think they define the genre.
They really are audience movies.
They are.
Audience participation, you know, you could be in a theater and you could hear the ball screaming. It's a cathartic kind of experience watching
mm-hmm.
these movies.
It is. It is.
Now, Kane Hodder, you spoke to many of the Jasons, or if not all. Did you speak to all of the Jasons?
We talked to all of them, but I have to come clean. We found out there's one we didn't talk to, and nobody knows about this. It was a woman. Her name
really?
Is Ellen Lutter is her name, and she was I might be getting this wrong, but I think she did makeup or catering or something different on the set. And they in the very first scene in Friday 2, you see those feet walking across the street, and they're on their way to sort of kill Adrian King.
Right.
So that's her. It's this woman. And, and we didn't find this out until way late, and we were doing a one day of New York interviews, Betsy Palmer and John Fury and Lauren Marie Taylor and a couple other people, and Ellen lives in New York, and I emailed her, I got in touch with her, she confirmed it was her and could not make the interview. And but nobody else has ever said that, no one, and so I figured out who would notice, but we tried, so maybe
yeah.
the interview will sort of clear it up that we did know about it.
What made Kane's portrayal of Jason stand out for you?
For me, it was just that the way he carried himself and the way he battled Tina at the end of part 7, I just got this sense of a very enraged zombie. And, of course, the look, John Carl Beekler's directing in that is great in terms of the look of Jason and what he carried, he basically created such a visual and memorable character for me. And when he comes out of the lake and stands up and you see his spine because it's been eaten away by the lake and all that, and it just was very striking to me. And you compare that to part 5 where it's a guy in a jumpsuit and, you know, just this mask, it's a whole different dynamic. He was truly a monster with battle scars and was fighting this woman who was his equal. And I think that it just stood out for me. And plus, I was a lot younger, and I think it resonated with me more than the other movies. Even in part 6, which had jumped back into the formula and he was killing people and going crazy, there was something about part 7 that drove me crazy.
Yeah, but there was – Jason is – as a character, is there only so much kind of invention you can put into it? Because watching the third one, and you speak of this in your documentary as well, Richard Brooker, who played Jason in the third one, I notice, he seems to feel pain, and he actually runs. So that was considered, an inventive way to approach Jason in the third one.
Right.
Did you find, though, that everyone had – I know you did because they speak to this in the film – but everyone had their own kind of take on how to make their Jason different?
Yeah, and with Richard Brooker, he said he got no direction from the director, and so he decided to do his own thing. And that's what I think separates, this series from Nightmare on Elm Street. What I like about the Halloween and Friday series is you have different actors portraying the monster in a different way, and I think that's interesting. Sometimes it's a hit, sometimes it's a miss, but I think that alone, just having another actor, is something that can breathe new life into a character, whereas Robert Englund is playing the same character over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge for him to breathe something new into it. And for Friday, the whole Jason X thing was a way to reinvent him. I mean, he was the Terminator. I mean, they turned him into a RoboCop kind of.
Right.
And
right.
And did it work? Sure, it worked. But was it Jason? Didn't really. It was Jason in space. It didn't really feel like a Friday movie. And so part of the problem, I think, with the longevity of the series is the longevity of the series. You have to keep reinventing and keep going. There's this hunger, this undying hunger to keep seeing Jason on the screen. And then when they try to give you something new, you hold it against them.
Right.
And if you don't try to give them something new, they hold it against you because they go, oh, it's just more of the same. So it's very kind of catch-22 to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm interested to know what your personal favorite kill is from this series.
My personal favorite, I like everyone. I just love that sleeping bag kill.
Everybody talks about the sleeping bag.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I love it because I remembered my reaction in the theater. It was just like I remember everybody screaming. It was the best thing I had ever seen in a Friday movie. You know,
right.
I also love the face freezing in part 10 where he shoves her.
I do too. Yeah, yeah.
That's probably my second. One and it's just because I remember thinking I've never seen anything like that in my life, and it worked.
Exactly,
it was just a sleeping
bag.
Yeah.
So tell me about the fans of the series and horror movie fans in general. I know you've been out at a few conventions and signings and things. I think you had one just last week upon the release of this.
Yeah.
Tell me about that group. They're a very enthusiastic group, aren't they?
Yes, they are, and they're devoted, and I think they're the ones that really this DVD was made for. I know that there's a lot of general horror fans that just like general, horror in general, and they'll pick it up, and they'll, his name was Jason, will be on Stars this coming Friday, and I know people will be channel surfing and they'll watch it, but I think the people that will really appreciate this look back are the diehard fans. At Dark Dell's bookstore last Tuesday, hundreds of people came. We had 42 guests, people who made, like my team of people that made the documentary, but my God, 30-something guests from the actual Friday movies, directors, writers, actors, the Moore twins were there, Lawrence
wow.
Monison, the cast of the new movie was there. It was this incredible event, and fans could not believe it. I saw some people with tears in their eyes. I was shocked that people wanted my signature. I'm not in the movies, but they wanted my signature and then walked over to Kane and wanted his signature. And so you're just embraced, I think, as a filmmaker when you do something like this. And I was in those lines before. I'm still in those lines. I mean, I stood in line to meet Kane Hodder at Spooky World in Massachusetts. There's like a theme park out there. And I stood in line. I have a picture with him, and I paid to meet him. And so I get it. Understand that, and they're great people. They're highly intelligent people. They read
right.
things into these movies that blow me away. And the more you talk to them, the more you realize how great they are in so many different ways.
Yeah. Well, you guys are like the Beatles for the fans of these kinds of movies. So. what are your thoughts on the remake?
Well, I haven't seen it. I'm going to see it on Tuesday. I'm getting into a screening. I'm not going to the premiere, although I tried.
right.
I love the idea of the remake, and it's kind of rare because I'm usually not a remake kind of supporter. I think, why bother? I thought remaking Halloween was like a really tall order.
Right.
But for this, I thought, as much as Friday the 13th was groundbreaking in so many different ways, was it a great film? Was it a great, it was really, yes and no. So I thought, well, maybe it's worth looking at Jason and not doing another sequel. I mean, this really isn't a remake. Betsy Palmer's not doing the killing, or Mrs. Voorhees isn't killing. So it really is a Jason sequel to me. And I've met Brad Fuller and the guys at Platinum Dune. And they just really, they're huge fans of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And, the
great.
Last thing you want to hear is the people making it just don't care. They want to make
yeah.
a buck. That's not true with Brad Fuller. He's a huge, huge fan. And so he had a personal interest in making it great. And so I'm very excited. I've heard nothing but great things about it. And I can't wait. I really think I'm going to like it. So, and I haven't read the script. Everyone I know has read it. And I won't read it.
I agree with you, man. I don't like the spoiler-filled atmosphere myself now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But you obviously are a huge horror fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you have another similar project on the Psycho Legacy coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And also, is there another film or series of films that you'd like to explore in this manner?
Yes. Well, Psycho is the brainchild of my friend Rob Galuzzo, who has been the creative force behind that for a couple of years. He's brought me on more or less to handle the business side of the Psycho Legacy and handle all the stuff that nobody wants to do, the licensing, the selling,
right.
All of that. And so I love the Psycho films. They're, of course, up there in my top 10 as well. list of, you know, favorite movies. But Rob is really, I'm just sort of stepping in and helping him bring his vision to fruition, and I'm really grateful that he wanted me part of the project. And I don't think it's going to be difficult at all for him to find a distributor. I mean, next year is the 50th anniversary of Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
Worth taking a look back, you know, that these whole retrospectives. That's the reason why I find that I like to do them. Nightmare on Elm Street is definitely an obvious next move because they'll be remaking that movie. And Warner Brothers is talking to us, and so it looks good. And I can't wait. I would love to jump into Nightmare on Elm Street. There's a lot of bonus features on that series, but I think there's a lot that we could still tell in a 90-minute retrospective.
Sure.
For Nightmare. And then I'm doing another series called Prank, which is if you go to prankmovie.com, you can see a little bit about it. It's a horror anthology directed by Scream Queens. So we have people like Danielle Harris, Heather Langenkamp from the original Nightmare on Elm Street directing, and they're shorts, and they've never directed before. And it's exciting to me because everybody asks these ladies to be in their movies, but they don't ask them to ever direct them.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to direct, and I've gotten to know a lot of them. And we actually want to do a series of movies like Prank 2, Prank 3, PJ Souls. We would love to get Shawnee Smith involved. Dee Wallace Stone, Adrian King, all these people that are known for their screaming, you know, being Scream Queens are now directing horror shorts in which they're directing, you know, brand new Scream Queens. Danielle did her story. We finished it. It's great. She did a fantastic job, and we're doing Heather Langenkamp's story next. And it's a little vampire story, and it's great. And
that's a great idea.
That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah. You know, like, they already have an audience who will listen to them and give them a chance. You know, it's not like a movie directed by an unknown. I mean, it's Heather Langenkamp directing. And, yeah, let's check that out. And so the idea started because I was looking to do a feature with Danielle. She wants to direct. And about a year and a half ago, I was looking for script after script after script to find for her. I couldn't find anything. And she just, you know, we were ready to give up. And then I said to her, you know, it might be hard to sell you as a director. People know who you are as an actor, but it might be hard to get all of our funding if you haven't directed. So I said, well, what about something small? And I had just written this little story called Madison with our producing partner, Tommy, who also produced, his name is Jason with me. And he said, let's ask Danielle to direct it. And she read it and loved it and said, yes, I want to do this. And in no time, we had set it up. We had cast it, and we shot it in 5 days. And she was incredible, you know. And we said, well, you know, Danielle just did this. If we get two more Scream Queens, we can have a really cool idea. And so that's how that was born.
Yeah, and Danielle's been in the business since, you know, she was 11, 12. So
it's
she would take to it, yeah.
Exactly, and her strength was dealing with the actors. She cast her good friend Dana DeRay in the lead role, and what she put Dana through on set, it was almost savage. It was like she had this performance out of this woman, and she did an incredible, Dana is amazing. So anyway, we're hoping to finish it this year. The Friday the 13th documentary totally sidetracked us because we got our funding so quickly, and nothing else existed, I think, for all of us for 13 weeks putting this together. So we pushed the Prank series aside, but now we're revisiting it, and we're going to finish it this year. So if you guys want to have me on again to talk about that, I can even get, you know, Ellie and Danielle and Heather
Certainly.
And anyone else on board.
Yeah,
we
would
love
to have
love
you back.
That.
I'll be back
that.
For it.
You've been great, man, and your movie's great, and I congratulate you on it, and we'll push it hard for you because I love it.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank
I hope
you.
To talk to you soon.
All right, thanks
Take
a lot.
Care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now.